Today's program has been pre-recorded. Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey everyone, welcome into Readin', Writin', Reason with Dom Giordano, Dan and Henry at the controls this week. We bring you parental rights. How much is that playing out all over the place? The cost, the controversy, the issues that come up when it comes to our kids, our schools, and the future. That's what Readin', Writin', and Reason is all about each week. And of course, in the news, a lot of stuff going on around the issue of males and female sports. We see that later on in the show today, we're going to have Riley Gaines here to talk about that. We see the Nevada and the San Jose State. The most recent San Jose State has someone who's transgendered, and Nevada has said they're going to forfeit. They're not going to play them. Two girls, or at least one, on the San Jose State team are suing also. They don't want to be teammates and be involved in this thing. So this issue is not going away. It's kind of moving into presidential politics. An issue that is being reaffirmed. It's amazing. The Supreme Court decided this. And it's the issue of enrollment at the more, shall we call them, elite colleges. This from the New York Post, Ricky Shalot writing about this headline, Asian enrollment at top colleges, Princeton, Yale, and Duke down, an admissions group claims discrimination again. They say that Asian students are being discriminated against by elite colleges even after the Supreme Court ruled affirmative action unconstitutional, the Students for Fair Admissions group alleges. Princeton, Yale, and Duke have come under scrutiny as the demographic breakdown of their incoming classes has barely budged despite the ruling, apart from a decline in Asian students, though. At Duke, the percentage of Asian students dropped from 35 to 29. How's that possible? Because at MIT, which I think is following the law, it went up by 7%. So what I think is happening here is these schools are still feeling they are not going to follow the directives of the Supreme Court around affirmative action and admission to their schools. And they're thinking, well, how is this going to be enforced? We have arguments here that we're going to continue to play this out. And really what we're seeing here is discrimination against Asian students. By all the metrics that are used to get in, you know, the chase to get into these elite colleges, what's happening here is the numbers are out of line here. Who's wrong? Suddenly MIT has 7% more Asian students, or are Duke and Yale and these others, which have actually gone down in some cases. They're playing a game here, I believe, and there's going to be more lawsuits, more things that sadly end up before the Supreme Court. Now, speaking of colleges, you know, student loans are one of the biggest things that we've debated before. Why should this be the one thing, the one debt that you routinely hear people saying should be forgiven? You know the battle that went on all the way to the Supreme Court. Well, here's a case in point. This from Broad and Liberty, local publication. State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta is the Democrat nominee for Auditor General in this November's election. Now, the Auditor General involves auditing finances, trying to make sure all those billions thrown into state government and all the entities that are involved with it are being efficient and not corrupt, right? Well, he was sued, they report in January, by Drexel University for more than $36,000 in unpaid tuition and late fees, according to court documents. He enrolled for classes that were apparently leadership master's level. Broad and Liberty reports although demand for payment has been made repeatedly, the defendant, in this case Malcolm Kenyatta, has failed to pay the balance due. The filing asks for a balance of $36,139. His excuse, his spokesperson said, like millions of Americans, Representative Kenyatta carries debt from pursuing higher education. This matter is no longer pending, was settled in 2024. That's what he says. As a state legislature, Kenyatta earns a salary of $106,422 per year, plus an allowance, how is this, of $185 each day for expenses. Even with that outstanding balance, though, Drexel University featured Kenyatta in an alumni spotlight article on the value of graduate education. So this is something that we'll continue to watch. But again, how do you run for Auditor General when you are so deficient in paying off your personal debt, in this case, this student loan debt, et cetera, even though it became a public matter? We will see how that plays out. New Jersey wants to do two things that are progressive and I think ineffective on our watch here on Reading, Writing, and Reason. First of all, New Jersey schools could be required to teach Hispanic and Latino history. This is out there with a new bill, and I have nothing about that. Of course, that ought to be the case. I just see this as a point of emphasis that is way overboard as far as what they claim is not being taught. We'll see. We'll see how they calibrate it. But the other is more serious. In New Jersey, Phil Murphy, the governor, is one of the prime people behind this. They would like to see 16 and 17-year-olds be able to vote in school board elections. The argument, they go to school. Now, you know, this idea we see from progressives of constantly trying to lower the age in which people can vote. This is just another pretense, I think. The argument is, and I get the argument, well, they have to go to these schools. They should have a say about who sits on the school board. Really? Do we think the average 16 and 17-year-old, and in these school board races, this could be quite a number of people. You know, the voting is not necessarily that high. If you got hundreds of students to vote for somebody maybe coming up with something arguably the community doesn't want, but maybe the students would, this could be problematic. So let's keep our eye on how that plays out. Something that is problematic, but just keeps on going up, is a story this week about migrants overwhelming school districts in Pennsylvania. So the taxpayers, either statewide or locally, end up with a hefty price tag. The place that they feature is Charleroi, Pennsylvania, as one example, but there are an increasing number of these smaller communities who have to bear this burden. And again, overcrowding in schools, more money, more teachers of English as a second language. One happy thing to end on. Billionaires are backing a big-time anti-woke university. Jeff Yass, who's very wealthy, local, friend of the show, Harlan Crow, another billionaire, are among donors for a school that touts a fearless pursuit of truth. Fearless pursuit of truth. This is the University of Austin that has been started. It has raised nearly $200 million so far, including $35 million from Yass. And you have people like Bill Ackerman, who's been in the news as another billionaire who's anti-woke. The program contrasts their position on any number of things which are informed by critical thinking versus what they say is obviously something that's wrong on college campuses across the country. We will keep our eye on that as the school opens and develops. But it does have national name recognition already because of all this money that's poured in. And because of their pedigree, which is doing something that these other universities are not. All right, so we have a lot going on today here on Reading, Writing, and Reason. Coming up, Dr. Stanley Goldfarb, Philly guy, and one of the leaders of Do No Harm. He's with us because recently there was a big news conference exposing the millions and millions of dollars that Pennsylvania taxpayers are spending for so-called gender-affirming care and/or surgeries that are often irreversible, of kids who believe they're in the wrong sex, transgender surgeries and the like. And he's made some compelling arguments. A, taxpayers shouldn't be funding all this. B, these hospitals are making a lot of money. And I think in his belief system, they are sometimes committing things that are irreversible harms. So Dr. Stanley Goldfarb is next. All that here on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded. I'm going to teach
you. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Reading, Writing, and Reason. Dr. Stanley Goldfarb of Do No Harm has been my guest in the past. He was with us, as I just said, recently. And he was with us to talk about what's going on in Pennsylvania with all this taxpayer money being spent on gender-affirming care is what they call it. Here's what Dr. Goldfarb told me about it. Dr. Stanley Goldfarb is the chairman of Do No Harm, a Philly guy. I think he's been with us before. So last week in Harrisburg, the Family Institute of Pennsylvania, some Republicans unveiled the connection was over $6 million over the course of time of what we as taxpayers have spent on surgeries and so-called gender-affirming care. A lot of the children's hospitals, Children's Hospital of Penn State, by the way, you know, when you see Penn State, realize how progressive the outfit is really there. It's not just the football team. And our own Children's Hospital of Philadelphia involved in this. And big money involved in it. And someday are we going to look at this like, oh, I don't know, lobotomies. We talked about that last week. Let's go to Dr. Stanley here on Talk Radio 1210. Dr. Stanley, welcome in. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Good to be with you, Don.
So the nexus with tax dollars should shock people. Do we have a sense, was it Governor Wolf? How did that come about that we ended up spending that much money? That's what was documented last week.
Yeah, well, our database, which we just created out of public information. These are data that are supplied by hospitals to people that collect these data. It's charges that they send in. And so we can't distinguish between, we could go into more detail, but our top line data is all of the dollars that have been spent. Now, a lot of that is related to Medicaid and spending that goes on for some children that are in the CHIP program. But this is a minimal sense of how much of this is going on around the country. And it turns out Children's Hospital has the most patients that we were able to identify, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and have performed a number of surgeries and have billed several hundred thousand dollars over the last few years. But, our data represents an absolute minimum because in producing this database, we wanted to make sure that we weren't overcounting and we weren't, hyping something that was a real problem and making it sound even worse than it is. But in fact, it is quite a large problem around the country. And again, our data are incomplete nationally because in California, the Kaiser Permanente program, which has been very active in this field, doesn't report their data. And we don't have any reports of data where patients are self-pay. So these are only charges that were submitted to either the insurance company or federal payers.
Mm-hmm. Does it surprise you? Look, my second son was in Children's Hospital. I guess he was around 18 months or so, and it was world-class care, without a doubt. So I've been a fan. When they took this 12-year-old girl who's still alive, it was a national story, and were able to downsize a human heart that she needed. I think it was a heart. World class, but I'm done with them, and I just think there's a couple of activists there, as far as I can tell, that have taken over, and the rest of the institution thinks just their good name will go on. Is it money with these institutions, in your view, or is it maybe an activist or two there that gins this up?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. Look, Children's Hospital is a fantastic hospital. There's no question about it. If I had a young child right now, my children are grown, but if my grandchildren had serious illnesses, that's the first place I'd take them. So we need to separate out this from, the overall quality of the institution. The problem here is that there are children that are being harmed by this, and mostly it's by a small group of activists who push this ideology and believe that they're doing the right thing for children, when in fact we know the data don't support that. It shows that the vast majority of these children need to go through puberty, need to become adults, and then if they decide they want to live a life as a transgender person, that's their business, and that's something that they can decide. But it's not for children to make that decision, and it's not for adults to allow
that. Well, let's talk about that. You know, you hear this argument that really fires me up. Well, why are you, Dr. Stanley, and why is Dom for government interference here? You know, government stay out. Why can't the parents say, I want my 10-year-old to go through all these horrible treatments?
Well, you know, let's say that the parents come in and say, my child has diabetes and I want my child to get insulin when the child has a perfectly normal blood sugar. We wouldn't allow that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think parents, you know, obviously parents have a critical role in the care for their children and worrying about their children, but they're not experts in this area. And for the most part, they've either been coerced into this idea by physicians who have told them that unless you do this, your child has a good chance of committing suicide,
exactly,
which is not true, or they have mistaken ideas of their own. And we have to worry. I mean, society's job is not only to protect parents' ability to control their children, but also the safety of the children. And this is a child safety issue, and that's our concern. This is not about whether we approve or disapprove of transsexualism and people being able to change their secondary sexual characteristics. That's something for adults to decide. This is about saving children from an irreversible damage that can occur. We have no idea of how many of these children that start down this path really regret it. We think it may be something in the order of at least 50% over a relatively short period of time. And looking out over many years, it may be substantially higher than that.
Dr. Stanley Goldfarb with us, do no harm. Doctor, what about those who say, okay, we're not going to do these horrific surgeries, they're essentially irreversible. What the heck's wrong with you people, though? How about we try out the puberty blockers and all this other stuff?
Well, you know, again, puberty blockers are not approved for this activity of blocking puberty in children that have gender dysphoria. They were used to prevent children, for example, 6 or 7 years old from starting to go through puberty, which would have been quite inappropriate for their social development. But once they reach the age of 10 or 11 or 12, then they're allowed to go through puberty and the drugs are stopped. In this case, the idea is to block puberty from ever really happening and then to put the child on sex-altering hormones that allow them to look like the different sex than they were born in. We know that the vast majority of these children, again, if they're allowed to go through puberty, would be fine. And we also know that these drugs have real consequences. The puberty blockers have been associated with a whole variety of adverse events, including some changes in cognitive development, because after all, going through puberty is part of the normal developmental process. And we know that being put on these sex-altering hormones can have lots of consequences, including obesity can occur, including altered bone function and altered reproductive capacity. We know that many of these children will become sterile, will never be able to have children of their own if they're on a prolonged course of these sex hormones during what ought to be a normal puberty. So there are a lot of consequences of it, and I think that this is why so many of the European nations, I think it's up to a half a dozen now, have decided that these treatments should not be used routinely and that they should be reserved for a very rare child after a very extensive evaluation and probably only in research protocols, rather than allow what are normal children to be put into this position. These children may turn out to be gay, they may turn out to be bisexual, whatever, but they're normal people with normal capacity for developing into normal adults, and putting them on these medications prevents that from happening in a normal fashion.
And I like that argument, too. The European countries, arguably, you could say they're more, quote, progressive than the United States. But they, through trial and error, have learned this, and that you're right. They have backed away. So what is it, then, is it as I think it's activists who have seized control in some places, and maybe some people look the other way because you can make a lot of money doing this too, and there's just enough of them out there Dr. Stanley, not to make it political, but it's shocking, and it's starting to get played constantly, that Kamala Harris has rescinded all of her positions on fracking and deeply held things that she's obviously a progressive on. There is one, though, and it's this. Even illegal immigrants having the right to get treatments that we pay for around transgender issues and also with kids. So out of everything that is progressive agenda, she's turned on that. She can't turn on this, though.
Yeah, you know, my organization, Do No Harm, our focus has been on the children. We feel very strongly that the children should not be put into this situation. Many of these children, as I said, are gay and are being prevented from going through a normal puberty and developing as gay individuals. So this is sort of an anti-gay activity as well as being an activity.
But let me slow down on that then. Well, why would these people then be against that? Because I would think, based upon their, you know, politics of this, certainly they would want to protect people, kids who feel they're gay at that point in time, reasonably. Why go to this extreme?
Well, it's a, you know, it's a very controversial question in the gay community.
Yeah.
There are many in the gay community that feel very strong that this is an activity called transing away the gay. In other words, instead of letting a child who might be gay and will develop as a gay person, assumes they're born into sexual appearance and all, changing them so that it approaches another sexual appearance. And there are many gay people. I work closely with an endocrinologist, Roy Epen. We just wrote an article in National Review Online about this whole issue. Roy is a gay physician and feels very strongly and has been pushing this issue very strongly that, you know, this is an example of sort of an anti-gay agenda. And it's very sad because, again, it's taking people's lives and altering them in ways that they may not ever be able to recover from and preventing them from being perfectly normal human beings and forcing them into a very abnormal situation where they're being maintained by, you know, lifelong medications that have, you know, serious side effects. And again, if an adult decides that's the path they want to pursue, so be it.
Exactly.
But it shouldn't be something that children are exposed to and forced into.
Thanks, doctor. What's your website, Do No Harm? Where do people go?
Yeah, it's donoharmmedicine.org, one word. And our database, Stop the Harm database, is on that website, and they can see their local institution and how much activity is going on, how much money is being earned by these activities. And I think it's quite an enlightening exercise.
Thank you, doctor. Thanks for the work you guys are doing very much.
Thank you very much, Don.
Dr. Stanley Goldfarb here on Talk Radio 1210. We'll get your reaction, 855-839-1210. And coming up, Wall Street Journal today makes a point that this is finally starting to surface where men, biological men in women's sports, is really playing out in all these Senate races. All right, that's Dr. Goldfarb talking about one aspect of this back and forth around transgendered issues here on Reading, Writing, and Reason. Coming up, our favorite, who's made tremendous progress on this front, the great Riley Gaines, joins us again on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm going to teach you.
Hey, welcome back into Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano. Dan at the controls. Riley Gaines has really sparked a revolution to highlight what goes on in women's sports. The lack of competition when we have men, biological men, playing against females. Here's what Riley told me in a recent visit is where she is now and what's happening across the country. Riley Gaines on Talk Radio 1210, coming to town finally. I have to get over to Bluebell today at 4 o'clock. Riley, where are you going to be?
Well, first, I'm so excited to talk with you guys. It's always a joy being on. I wish I would have coordinated this better, and I could be in studio with y'all. That's a dream of mine. Forget Joe
Rogan.
Well,
wait a minute. Before the election, we need to have you here. And we have a producer who says he could swim alongside you.
No, I cannot. That's Henry, right?
Yeah, no, it's not Henry. It's Jim Kelly.
I want to race you guys up the rocky steps.
Oh, man. All right.
Riley, so if you're hanging around through the day, come tomorrow. We'd love to have you in studio.
Yes, if you're staying
you
over.
You got it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We'll do that. So if you're anywhere near
we'll coordinate.
If you're near the blue, swimmers, do you guys carbo stack or do anything like that? What do you do before a race?
Of course, that's what you do. You eat lots of pasta. That's a big one. Lots of bread, lots of starches and carbs and all the things. And so last night, actually, I was in Harrisburg, spent the day in Harrisburg yesterday at the Capitol, of course, advocating for common sense legislation. Had a really great day, spent the day with sponsors of the previous Save Women's Sports bill that was initially introduced in 2021. But to really no one's surprise, at least no one's surprise if you've been paying attention, then Governor Wolf vetoed this. They've had a hard time reintroducing, but Senator Ward, Representative Gleim, Representative Kiefer, really great people. And so very productive day yesterday in the Capitol. Here today, like you said, we're having a little round table discussion with parents in the area, parents who have young daughters who are concerned. These aren't even parents who are strictly Republicans or conservatives or feel very staunchly about other issues. I mean, these are parents who have unfortunately had to live the very real effects of progressive policy introduced, of course, at the state level, but also what we have seen from the Biden-Harris administration regarding Title IX.
You'll be at 860 Penland Bluebell Pike, Route 40, Dan? 240?
Number 240.
Dan. Number 240. Yeah, okay, that's in Bluebell at 4 p.m. today. You're near the Bluebell Inn. I'm telling you, stop in there, because I got to get there. They would give it to you, the recipe. I like pancakes a lot, but they're too fluffy. I don't. This guy has the thinnest pancakes on the East Coast. So I'm sure Riley Gaines can get it out of him, how to make them, Dan. You get on that, please. Put Henry on it, too. Put the whole staff on that. We need that. So, Riley, you're going to be with NFL star. Who, Dan?
Frank Murphy.
I don't know Frank Murphy. Who did he play? Tennessee? No?
No. Frank actually played with the Buccaneers. He played with the Dolphins. He really is. He has an incredible story of redemption, of finding Christ, of finding his purpose, and mentoring others, mentoring other young men. He's really incredible, and now has just been a force. He tackles issues like the fatherless epidemic, really, that has plagued this country, that has been detrimental to our youth, especially young boys. You know, we talk a lot surrounding the gender ideology movement about how it affects girls, but one, it also affects boys. But there are other issues like the fatherless epidemic. So he's great there. He does wonderful work in prison reform and putting curriculums in prison, putting young delinquents who have undoubtedly messed up back on track and putting them in a position where they can succeed and achieve once they get out. And so really, really important stuff. And it's a super cool collaboration, really. We're doing really wonderful work.
Also, Lou Holtz, who's quite a character, is the vice chair of America's First Athletes Coalition. Oh, okay. I thought Lou Holtz is what then?
No, Lou's just involved with the organization. She had a great had a great quote about Riley, Dom. He says, "We are blessed to have someone with the talents and abilities of Riley Gaines join our team. She is someone who stands not for what is popular, but for what is right, and America needs more than that." Quite some great words there from a legendary coach, Riley.
Absolutely.
Isn't it just? He really is. He's a legend. But we formed kind of this this coalition, for lack of better words, of elite athletes. We have deemed this coalition the Athletes for America. And it's filled with great people, other NFL stars like Jack Brewer. Coach Holtz has been a wonderful, wonderful role model, of course, on the field, what he's done in coaching. But beyond that, he's a wonderful person, a wonderful human who cares about America and who cares about making it great again.
Riley, watching last night's debate, it was textbook. And to some of the points you made, J.D. Vance humanizing himself after the media attacks, particularly the issue of abortion, but some of the other things that we've talked about here. I wish they had gotten into what is a flashpoint, which would have been an interesting debate, the prime thing with you in sports, some of the stuff going on. As much as there's big issues out there, Americans, we know up and down the line,
care about this deeply.
Absolutely, and I totally agree. The debate last night, it was so refreshing because it was so substantive. It had so much substance to it, which is, in my lifetime, I haven't really seen that type of dialogue and interaction. So it was wonderful. But to your point, I hate that the gender ideology movement has somehow been ignored or escaped the three national debates that we have had. This is an issue that one, it's a losing issue for the Democrats, and they know that. They know that. ABC knows that. CBS knows that. CNN knows that. MSNBC, they all know it. That's why they're not asking it, of course. But it's crucial, especially whether it's the sports stuff or more importantly, I believe, that what we are seeing in regard to the transing of kids, how children are being surgically and chemically castrated. Last night was a perfect opportunity, considering Governor Walz has been the biggest proponent for such. He has made Minnesota a trans refugee sanctuary state where kids from across the nation can come without even their parents' approval and get healthy body parts cut off. How in the world are we not talking about that? We will look back at this little blip in time, 50 years, I don't know the timeline, but we will look back at this and call it what it is, which is the biggest medical scandal this world has ever seen. How did we not address this? Wild to me, but of course, I believe entirely by design.
That is beautifully put. There are some of the biggest that have been put to bed. This opens it up. How could so many people, maybe it's not so many, but how could powerful people like Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which I used to sing the praises of, go down this path? That is exactly right. Now, Riley, one of the other things, kind of in your spare time, if there is any, you are the Outkick Gains for Girls show. Where do people find that?
You're right. I have a show with Outkick. It is called Gains for Girls. You can find that at outkick.com. Super cool stuff we're doing there, talking to, of course, people who have been impacted by this movement, having world leaders on, like Tulsi Gabbard was just recently on. This week we talk about the border with investigative journalist Sarah Carter, who spent some time down there. We had an episode come out today. Really, really great stuff, I believe, next week is Senator Marsha Blackburn, so stay tuned for that one. But it's important to, of course, be on the ground advocating, but to spread awareness, which is what the podcast Gains for Girls is doing.
Great stuff. And where do people see your website overall of everything you're doing? And just one reminder, you'll be over in Blue Bell today at 860 Penn Lynn, Blue Bell Pike, number 240, today at 4:00. Where do they go for all things Riley Gaines?
Yes. You can follow me on X. That is Riley_Gaines_. If you want to see some takedowns of Keith Olbermann, that's what I like to do in my free time. Mark Cuban, even last week, I'm like, what am I doing arguing with Mark Cuban? What do I know?
Well, wait a minute. What was Mark Cuban arguing with you about, economic policy or Shark Tank or what?
No, the border. He says that Kamala Harris has done a great job with the border, to which I told him. Yeah. I didn't realize that allowing 13,000 murderers, almost 16,000 rapists, and 320,000 unaccounted for children, you know, maybe we have different standards of a good job, but to me, that doesn't qualify.
Yeah, Riley, hope to get over there and see you today, but congratulations on everything. Bluebell today. If you're in town, we are going to run. Dan will be my surrogate in this. Oh, boy. Wait a minute. I'm going to tag another producer. I'm looking here in the producer's lounge.
We're bringing the wife, Maisie. She used to run at one point.
Okay,
she'll
bring it. Maisie will be the surrogate for Dan running against Riley Gaines up the steps of the Art Museum.
You're going down. You can time us down.
All right, Riley. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Riley Gaines with the latest. Sadly, there seems to be an update every week over this battle. Coming up, what else happened in the news this week here on Reading, Writing, and Reason?
Today's program has been pre-recorded. I'm going to teach
you. Hey, welcome into our final segment of Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano. Remember, tell people they can get this wherever you get your podcast or usually on Saturdays here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. We've talked a lot over the years on Reading, Writing, and Reason about Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology in Alexandria, Virginia. Hey, that was in the news this week. Martha Raddatz lives there, the woman from ABC in a $2 million house. And much was made of the fact of how wealthy, how educated this area is. Well, they have dropped a lot since they got away from merit in determining who gets in to that school. In addition to that, though, National Review reports that the Communist Chinese Party was given access to their blueprint for STEM education. They gave it to them, the school district, and U.S. educators helped with this. Is this something, this formerly top-ranked, well, it's still right up there, STEM school, including its curriculum, syllabi, and their plans, should be giving to our chief rival across China? Does that make any sense? Well, given where this school district has been in the news, as I've said, how they've really discriminated against potential Asian students wanting to get in and others, it's no surprise now that they are collaborating a bit here with the Communist Chinese Party. No, they should not be doing that. There's no reason to help them in their race to defeat America. So we'll have more on that as that continues. You know, I wish this school district was in Florida, because there, Governor Ron DeSantis drills down particularly on these education issues. Now, Florida's public universities are purging the list of general education courses they will offer next year to fall in line with the state law pushed by Ron DeSantis targeting woke ideologies in higher educations. These are so-called gut courses. They are both woke and they are these general education courses I believe to be a waste of time. The comprehensive course review spanning hundreds of classes across 12 state universities was triggered by a far-reaching higher education law passed last year that prohibited spending tied to diversity, equity, and inclusion. The policies are a key piece in Florida's efforts, led by DeSantis, to move past this. So these general education courses, too, as I said, are things that you get college credit for, I think DeSantis is thinking, that you shouldn't. We'll have more on that as the battle continues over it. One big update this week, too, on Reading, Writing, and Reason. There are rumors now that the Nevada athletic department is trying to pressure their volleyball players to not forfeit against San Jose State as that transgender controversy continues. They've issued a statement rebuking Nevada has its own women's volleyball team for forfeiting a rematch. And what I think is happening here is the majority of these young women are against playing against this team with a transgendered male. They're trying to work over a few others because, you know, to play volleyball, it's not like football. You don't need to have as many players out there. And Nevada will not forfeit that volleyball game if they can convince even a few of these women to renege on the statement that they'd rather take a forfeiture. To their credit, they are not doing what Penn did with Leah Thomas and the women on the team. They don't seem to be telling them there'll be repercussions against them, but they do seem to be hell-bent not to be one of the schools that forfeits to San Jose State. And the other development is at least one, if not two, players on San Jose State also oppose the transgender player, and one of them might be involved in the lawsuit that's going on against this. So this issue is not going to go away. It's in presidential politics. I think you're going to see this play out throughout the remaining days here. And I know that Vice President Harris has still stood by her position around transgender rights and government money to pay for gender-affirming care / surgeries for those that are here illegally, even if they're in prison. On the other side, Republicans are talking about this more, and particularly when it comes to competition against women having to play against transgender men, gender fluid, or biological males, that's not going to flow too well. America is incensed over this. The polling indicates it. All these lawsuits indicate it. These forfeitures indicate it. So expect to see more of it.
And we'll cover it here on Reading, Writing, and Reason fairly. We've had people on the other side making the argument, hey, where are these kids supposed to go to play? I know it may seem impossible to have a league. There's not enough people that can do that. But we've also seen injury with this. We've seen lack of competition. It's just not a good thing to continue to pit girls or women against this. Hey, that wraps it up for this week's edition of Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano, Dan, and Henry at the controls. Remember, tell people where to get it, wherever you get your podcast, or listen weekly on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
You need a lesson, gonna bring it to you now.